Hey everyone, welcome to The Progressive Vibe. I am your host as always, Dodrick. Today's date is April 24th, 2022. This is season 6, episode 10. And the name and title of this episode, The Need for Positive and Impactful Change in American Politics. So for today's show, we will talk about the need for positive and impactful change in American politics as we know it today. Who wields the power to do such a transformation? I will also share an insightful book I'm currently reading to help me further connect the dots on this urgent matter. But first thing first, I want to thank you to the listeners of the show for liking, sharing, donating to the show. However you choose to show support, it is always greatly appreciated. There would be no Progressive Vibe podcast if it wasn't for the listeners of the show for making it happen. So I always want to show my gratitude for the listeners of the show and doing what you do. If you haven't checked it out or not, we actually posted it to the Facebook page, the Progressive Vibe Facebook page. We are currently number 2 in independent politics. So I want to just congratulate you, the listeners, for making that happen. We try to be a progressive show, but also try to be independent. And I feel like that is the way to go, in my honest opinion. I think that is the future politics in this country. And I think that's going to be for the better. That's just it's just how I see it, honestly. I feel like when we have more independent mind people that are involved in our voting process, then I think that that does justice. We shouldn't just cater to one party. We should be open-minded, but we should also be progressive in that open-mindedness. So again, I want to thank the listeners of the show for making that happen. Such a big, huge accomplishment, and it's only up from here. Also, you can catch TP Vibe on all platforms. You can get your podcasts. So if you have Apple Podcasts, we're on there, Google Podcasts, Spotify, so forth. If you like to keep up with the number slot, if you will, in the top 100 for the Progressive Vibe, you should download this awesome app called Good Pods, GoodPods. Good Pods. They are a platform that has new upcoming and already podcasts that you can check out. So if you're familiar with it, please do the Progressive Vibe a favor and give us a 5-star rating. That goes a long way in helping us sustain that top slot number. And if you haven't already, please download the Good Pods app and look up Progressive Vibe, and you can listen to us on there and give us some feedback. That'll be very, very appreciative. Also, the Progressive Vibe has a website. You can get our latest episodes, our past episodes. You can learn more about the host, which is me. You can subscribe to the show. You can do all of this on theprogressivevibe.com. Also, if you would like to know more about the Progressive Vibe, you can follow me on Twitter at Dodi_Vibe. That's DODI_VIBE. And on my profile page, there is a Linktree button that you can hit, and it takes you to everything Progressive Vibe: Facebook, Twitter, Cash App, the website, so forth. So you can do all of that if you go to my Twitter page. Again, that's at Dodi_Vibe. Last but not least, guys, before we get into today's show, this show is sponsored by Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. If you listen to podcasts, or if you are a listener that wants to make their own podcast, check out anchor.fm.com to learn more, to get started on that. And on that note, guys, I will see you on the other side. Hey guys, welcome to the main show. So the need for positive and impactful change in American politics is desperately needed, in my opinion. Connecting the dots is always a test, because you have to not only live your life, but you also have to be aware of society around you. And sometimes we get so caught up in just worrying about ourselves that we don't worry about anyone else but ourselves. And I think that hurts society. I do. I think that that has an impact on other people, and more importantly, ourselves. And if we don't come together and fight for change in American politics, then everyone's going to suffer for it. Not just one race, not just one gender. Everyone will suffer from it. Regardless if you are a Republican or if you are a if you are a Democrat, life itself has no political affiliation. And a lot of people in this country honestly fail to realize that. And it hurts them, and it hurts everyone else. Because the value of life for an individual is precious. Nothing lasts forever. Everyone will eventually, and I hate to sound real bleak when I say this, but everyone will eventually die. And so for the short time that we have on planet Earth, why are we letting ourselves fall short of material value for oneself? Everyone in this country should have the right to get access to healthcare, to have a roof over their heads, to have a, if you are a working, able body, if you have a job, you are contributing to society. And so if you are doing that, you should earn a livable, comfortable wage. And what we have in this country is a class disparity. Only one group of people get to have access to certain human rights than another class of people. Regardless if you're black, regardless if you're white, it is a class disparity in this country. And regardless of what class bracket that you are in, if you are an American citizen who lives in the United States of America, you should have access to what everybody else has access to. Plain, simple, to the point. I'm so tired of rich people, corporations running amok over everyone else in this country. Don't get me wrong, I don't care if you're rich. But people should pay their fair share in taxes. And politicians have an obligation to make sure it is fair across the board. But what do? They use us as props. They say when it's time for election time, hey, the poor and middle class pay way too much in this country. And the rich do not pay enough in this country when we're talking about paying their fair share in taxes. But what happens when it's time to vote upon that type of legislation to make the rich pay their fair share in taxes? They don't do it. And they wonder why it causes anger and frustration in the country. They want to know why more and more young people are less involved, or just people in general, honestly. When they don't come out and vote. And that's just not a good thing for the democracy. That's not a good thing when you have a decline in representation within our voting process. You should want to have more Americans voting. But you don't give them anything to vote for. You don't do the things that you always preach that you're going to do. And if it's just as easy for me, I'm not a politician, but if it's easy for me to connect the dots, you know that it's easy for them to connect the dots. They just choose not to because it's not good for their own interest. More broadly speaking, their donors to their campaigns. Thus, taking the money out of politics is dire, honestly, because you're going to continue to always have people in elected office for the wrong reasons. But again, to furtherly connect the dots on this urgent matter, I have been reading a book that I found of interest, and it, you know, has some stuff in there that it's very insightful to me, and it's very telling about the country as a whole. And the book that I'm reading is by Bernie Sanders, and it's called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. And just to give you a rundown on the stuff that the book contains, it talks about defeating oligarchy. It talks about the decline of the American middle class, ending a rigged economy, healthcare for all, making higher education affordable, combating climate change, real criminal justice reform, immigration reform, protecting our most vulnerable, corporate media and the threat to our democracy. How do we turn out the way we do? You know, it covers so much. And, you know, like I said in the intro, I'm still actually reading the book. I have not finished it, but I do want to direct your attention to some of the pages that I've already read that stick out and that really, again, connect some dots on the urgent matter that we're in involving our American politics. So this is on page 18, actually. And Bernie just asks, logical questions. He says, how did the general population get the information they needed to make political decisions? Well, the media was controlled by large corporations. How did politicians get elected? Well, big money interests played a role in that as well. Who benefited from low wages and poor working conditions? Was racism just about irrational prejudice, or was there an economic benefit in keeping the races divided? Who made the decision to go into a particular war, and who profited from that? Was a good life really about earning more and more money so that we could consume more and more products? So those are just some questions that honestly I've thought about too in the past. This book, by the way, was in 2016 when Bernie Sanders was running for president. Obviously, he was unsuccessful in his presidential run, unfortunately. But a lot of this stuff that he talks about in his book gives you a kind of like direct, impactful view into what he was seeing on his campaign trail and more broadly speaking, just boots on the ground in these states that he went to, particularly in the southern states. I live in a southern state. I live in Alabama. And a lot of stuff that he talked about in his book referencing two southern states when it came to politics, is very revealing, It goes on. I'm going to skip to page 30 here. And this was the kind of campaign that he tried running. And I think that this is the necessary campaign material, strategy, if you will, that will ultimately be beneficial to society. He says, we would run a campaign based on coalition politics. We would try to bring together under one umbrella the many diverse elements of the city that were unhappy with the current city leadership. Now, he was talking about Burlington, his home state at the time. But again, I do think that this talks about a more overall view of America itself. He goes on to say, over the years, as is often the case in urban politics, the administration had drifted further and further away from the neighborhoods and the working families of the city and closer to the downtown business community and the moneyed interest. It goes on to say, he reached out to every possible group and organization that could and had good results. He brought into the campaign some of the municipal unions that were upset about paltry wage increases and poor labor relations practices. He also talked about them being able to attract tenants and their organizations that were getting very little help from the cities as rent skyrocketed. They brought aboard low-income groups that were unhappy with how the city was running the public housing system. They got support from neighborhood activists who opposed the construction of a highway that would run right through their community. Environmentalists joined them in opposition to a disastrous high-rise condominium project on the waterfront of the Lake Chaplin, the city's most prestigious natural resource. They also joined opposition to a major expansion of the hospital that would encroach into a neighborhood. On top of all that, the mayor was proposing a big hike in the city's property tax, something that many homeowners were less than enthusiastic about. And it goes on to say he never forgot how important political work can be done by making door-to-door contact, speaking directly to the constituents and answering their questions. And he goes on to say, we need a lot more grassroots politics in America. And we do. We need a lot more people that are willing to speak directly to the person in their state without speaking for them. It's a difference. When you speak to them, you're speaking directly to someone, and you want to directly know the concern that they have within their community. But when you go on television and you try to assume what people's going through, and even if you're right, but you fail to address it, then there lies the problem. You have to talk to people. You have to make people feel like they are important, because they are. Everyone is important in this world. And everyone deserves to be heard. We're all humans at the end of the day. We all have commonalities that we share. And when you're not getting those type of commonalities, meaning majority of Americans in this country, then it becomes an issue. And it makes it hard for people like Bernie Sanders, for example, who in my estimation has the best vision out of all the other candidates that were running for president at the time. It makes it hard for people to get motivated and go out when you have so much corruption within the government. Because when you've been screwed over so many times, talk is cheap. It's cheap. And it sucks when people actually want to become a public servant rather than a politician. And, you know, money interests lies underneath that. And the corporatists always seem to win, because money has took over our politics. And once it gets flushed out, you will have more public servants, I feel like, will come to light and have more positive representation for their constituents. I'm going to skip to page 45 here. That's something else that caught my eye. So right here, Bernie was talking about he believed that within a broken and dysfunctional healthcare system, the lack of primary care for so many is one of our most serious problems. People should be able to get a doctor or dentist when they need to. We have made some progress in that area. This is what he said, that we made progress in the area, but more needs to be done. I couldn't agree more. That's one of the things that comes to my mind when we're talking about what attracts people to come out and vote. Universal health care. It should be a fundamental right to naturally have that for people who live in your country. It should not be based on how much money you make to determine what type of benefits you get when it comes to healthcare. No, that's not fair. That's not right. And it's unjust. And even though it is slightly improving, more needs to be done. And last two pages here, they kind of intertwine with each other before we go to break here. Something that also I thought was really telling. And it goes to race in this country. It's like the thing that keeps us from being great, actually great in this country. And that's racism. It's the top thing that keeps everyone in this country, in my opinion, from flourishing on top of greed, you know, money, etc. Racism is a fundamental issue in society itself, and it keeps us from addressing the problems that all Americans face in society. And Bernie said something here that I thought was very telling. This was This was back in 2014. Bernie was the chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. He had an opportunity to visit a hospital in Jackson, Mississippi. The following year, in August 2014, he returned to Mississippi. On that trip, he said that he held an unforgettable meeting in Jackson, Mississippi at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, known as the IBEW, Local 40 Union Hall. He said that he was excited by the idea of him meeting with trade unionists in Mississippi, but had his doubts as to how many people would actually show up to the socialist senator from Vermont. He said that he was pleasantly surprised. The doors opened and people kept coming. They ended up filling the hall with several hundred attendees, almost all working class. Approximately two-thirds were white. One-third was approximately black. It goes on to say there were also a number of black members from the state legislature at the meeting, as well as the chairman of the state Democratic Party. It goes on to say people were happy to attend because it was very unusual for a non-Republican U.S. senator to visit Mississippi. After all, the state was deep red. There was no money to raise. Why would a Democratic senator visit? So it goes on to say right here, guys, that Bernie was introduced by the local union president, John Smith. It goes on to say that Bernie spoke for a while and then asked a question to the audience that had been on his mind for a long time. And it says, quote, "How does it happen that in one of the poorest states in the country, Mississippi voters keep electing right-wing Republicans who have contempt for working people and who push policies that benefit the rich at the expense of nearly everyone else," end quote. The answer that he got back from the crowd was, quote, "Race, race, race," end quote. It goes on to say the population in Mississippi was overwhelmingly Republican. In 2012, Obama received unbelievably only 10% of the white vote. It goes on to say for 2 hours, that was the issue we discussed. So for 2 hours, when Bernie was on that campaign trail in Jackson, Mississippi, 2 hours, that was the discussion of topic, race. And he goes on to say, how do we get white working class Americans to stop voting against their own best interest? What kind of efforts do we have to make to bring people together, black, white, around economic issues? Bernie goes on to say Republicans have cultivated into a fine art the ability to divide people up by race, gender, nationality, or sexual orientation. He goes on to say that's what they do. That's the essence of their politics. They get one group to fight another group while their wealthy friends and campaign contributors get rich and laugh all the way to the bank. And the little bit left right here, guys, it says, at the time when so many Americans in Mississippi and around the country are hurting financially, how do we overcome those divisions and bring people together? This is not just a challenge in places like the South. It is the challenge that progressives face throughout the country. We lose when we are divided. We win when we are united. And I just thought that that was such a telling, those were such telling paragraphs, because we are stronger when we are united, less when we are divided. And a lot of it comes, a lot of it comes up to be economic issues. And the way to fend off racism, the way to fend off prejudice in America is to find remedies and solutions, to actually get politicians who are going to work at those remedies and solutions instead of just always pointing at the people to blame. That's easy. It's easy to call somebody a racist. We know that America was built upon racism, slavery. We already know that. But we're not going to be able to change American politics inside and out until we actually start putting the American people first and start answering the urgent matters that the American people are raising. It's just that simple. And that just leads to be my next question, which is, who wields the power to do such a transformation? We will talk about that when we come back from this break, guys. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, guys, welcome back from the break. Thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate you guys. I know that the last segment was pretty lengthy. It was so much stuff in there that I wanted to share with you guys with the book that I'm reading, because honestly, I think that regardless of who wrote the book, Bernie Sanders, even though I think he's one of my political heroes in my era, but those are the right words. Those are the right things that we should be talking about, that we should have for one another, to care, to empathize, to relate to one another. And I just feel like we've gotten so far away from that because everyone is in their political corners for some obvious reasons, some not so obvious reasons. But regardless, it does not move the needle forward. It just stays right where it is. It stays stagnant, or we continue to take steps backwards. And that's just not the America or the world in a broader lens want to be a part of. I want to be a part of a society that wants the best for its people. I want to live in a society where people have the access to the things that they need for not only themselves, but for their families, for their loved ones, and people who they don't even know. And so when I think about who wields the power to do such a thing, it's us. We have the power to make a better world for us, our future us's. You know, like, I don't want to continue to go down this spiteful, hateful, seems to be vengeful line of politics that we're currently in right now. We were headed that way for a long time, and honestly, it never went anywhere. It's just expanded. So we have the power to transform this country for the better and have impactful change for everyone. It was so many generations, guys, that had the opportunity to make this impactful change. And I'm not saying that things have not changed for the better, because they have, slowly but surely. But we are in a new line of politics. We are in a new era. And just some of the generations before us. You know, I'm a millennial, known as Gen Y. But so many generations before us, we have to think about that, wanted to take the next step in transformation, positive transformation. And regardless of how big it was, how impactful it was, it made a change. And that's what we have to get to. The lost generation, the generation known as 1914, was 1890 through 1915. The interbellum generation was 1901 through 1913. The greatest generation, this is what it was called, the greatest generation, was 1910 through 1924. The generation known as the silent generation, it's 1925 through 1945. The baby boomer generation, 1946 through 1964. Gen X, 1965 through 1979. Xennials, 1975 through 1985. Millennials, such as myself, 1980 through 1994. Thus, you have the upcoming generations, which is known as iGen or Gen Z, 1995 through 2012, and Gen Alpha, which is 2013 through 2025. And the reason that I wanted to read you guys the generation names through the eras of which they were in, is because all we have is time on our hands. We have time to make things right for people. We have time to make a better world, a better environment, a better living, a better system for American politics. And I'm hopeful that that day will be soon. I'm hopeful that the older generation and the younger generation have seen eye to eye and get one struggle that maybe the older generation might not necessarily been in, but they are more understanding of what lies in front of them today, which is a different type of politics. Now, some people are just stuck in their ways. You know, the older you get, the more you get let's be real. The more you get stuck in your own ways, I'm sure when I get to be a certain age, some things when it involves politics, I won't necessarily be so adapted to change in, but we have to learn to be able to adapt to change, especially if it's positive and impactful change. Because love is always bigger and better than hate. Positive solutions are always better than negative solutions. And if we as people, specifically here in the United States, are able to communicate with each other, to be to show empathy towards one another, to relate towards one another, we can find a common ground. There's a lot of common ground out there, but it's not going to be able to change if we don't allow ourselves to be that change. And last quick things here. I just want to say, when it relates to politicians, often politicians will use tropes or moments in history on the national stage to try to run for president. Most politicians are willing to play that political game because that's what it is for a lot of these politicians. It's a game. It's not going to affect them or their families at the end of the day, but it will for their constituency. It will for us. But it's a game to these people, not to everyone that's in Congress, but a whole host of people. It's a game, which in return leads me to my next point. It hurts their own constituency in their own state, so they can promote themselves as some kind of national leader. Again, not actually helping their own constituency, but more so helping their own political career. It's not about you. It's about the people in which you serve, the people who put you there. And I'm going to end it by saying this right here, guys. There's a difference between a politician and a public servant. Okay? You can be a politician and hold elected office and still not actually serve the public. We should want to elect more people who are public servants, because public servants seek political office to remedy social problems within society. While politicians seek political office in order to, get a job, to get paid, to have power. That's the difference. And we have to remember this when it's voting time. And when we vote people in these type of powerful positions, we have to remember this. Whether that's president, governor, mayor, district judges, and so forth. So I just wanted to leave that with you guys. When we come back, we will have the social media break of the show, guys. Stay tuned, and we will be right back. Hey guys, welcome to the social media break of the show. If you like to follow me on Twitter, you can do this at Dottie_Vibe. That's DODI_V as in Victor, IBE. I do follow back, by the way. I know that's kind of like one of my pet peeves, I ain't gonna lie. people recommend like you follow them and stuff, and then you follow them and you don't get a follow back. Like, what? Come on, man. But anyway, guys, let's get into some of these tweets. First one here is from Jackson White. He's a contributor for TYT. He says, being social can open up a ton of doors. If you can, make it a habit to go out and meet new people of all kinds. Strengthen your social skills and presence as you build new relationships. I agree. It never hurts you to go out and be social, to, you know, despite how hard it may be, especially if you are a news junkie like myself. The news has a way of affecting me personally, because I take it personal when people are out here struggling and they're just trying to live their daily lives, such as myself. And I have empathy. I care about other people and not just myself. But I will say some days are better than others, but it is definitely a good attribute to be social. You never know what kind of doors it can potentially open, and you never know what kind of positive impact it can actually have on other people who may be in a worse off predicament than yourself. So I couldn't agree more on that. Next one here is from Nina Turner. She says, there's no freedom without economic freedom. And she follows it off by saying, $2,000 monthly checks are still a good idea. I agree with both of those fronts, mainly there is no freedom without economic freedom. And there's not. It's way too many people in this country that are suffering financially with no fault of their own. It's just how the system that we're under makes it as such. We need to have a different system. This system is uninhabitable now, and it's just obviously not working with the majority of working Americans in this country. It's just not. And we can blame it on the Democratic president. We can blame it on the Republican president. No. We need to hold everyone in elected office in Congress accountable. Not just the president, but the people who said that if you vote for them, they'll have your back when they get elected. And when they get into that elected position, you don't hear nothing from them. They're a whole different other person. We have to elect people who are going to run on merit. People who won't take political corporate PAC money. So they won't be influenced to do the wrong thing rather than to do the right thing. Let's go on down. Repostful and Relatable Podcast, a good friend of mine on Twitter, says, do what makes you happy. No point of being unhappy in life. Couldn't agree more, my friend. That's going to wrap up today's social media break of the show. I hope you did enjoy. If you would like to follow me on Twitter again, you can do this at Dottie_Vibe. And also, once again, I do follow back. When we come back, we will be wrapping up today's show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. welcome back from the break. That's going to wrap up today's show on the Progressive Vibe Podcast, Season 6, Episode 10, The Need for Positive and Impactful Change in American Politics. I hope y'all really enjoyed today's episode, found it to be insightful and impactful. I always like to have these particular discussions when it relates to specifically what can we do as people to make a better quality of life for everyone in America. Because it's going to take, guess what, everyone, not just one person, but the village. And I feel that that trend is starting to catch on more and more as we continue to evolve, and hopefully it will evolve into a more positive and impactful change in American politics. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. Stay tuned for that. If you would like to catch up on past episodes of The Progressive Vibe, you can do this on the website, theprogressivevibe.com, or you can click the link that will be uploading for this particular episode. It should take you to the rest of the episodes that we've done in the past. Please like, share, or donate to the show. It just goes such a long way. And the more we get our message out, the more of an impact the Progressive Vibe Podcast has on the public. And I couldn't do this without you guys. Thank you for the support. As I said in one of the segments, we are number 2 in the top 100 independent politics. That credit goes to the Progressive Vibe listeners. There would be no show without you guys. So I always want to bring awareness to that and show my gratitude to that, or for that. All right, guys. On that note, have a great rest of your weekend. Have a great week. Until then, stay positive, stay progressive. We'll catch you in the next one. Peace, love.